5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Is it recording? I'm not even sure it's recording. I better leave my finger on the record button just in case. The last few times I've taken it off, I've had 3 or 4 minutes of myself talking to myself, but no recording of a podcast. As I said the last couple of times, which you didn't hear, because I was talking to myself, this is late June, and we're coming up on 4th of July pretty soon. I am a social studies teacher, among other things. I just have come off of my 10th year of teaching 8th grade civics. I love it. It's a lot of fun. It's interesting and challenging. And a lot of social studies and history teachers really get into it. We want to watch things on the History Channel other than Ice Road Truckers. You know, we want to get back into that Revolutionary War, the War for Independence, and the Declaration of Independence. But a lot of people, I think they really genuinely don't know what the 4th of July is all about. You think it's about patriotism or the flag or America. And of course, you get those people that will kind of criticize us and chastise America.
You know, this is not just about boating and grilling and taking time off from work and fireworks. You know, freedom isn't free.
But they don't necessarily know what it's about. Because they'll turn it into another Veterans Day or another Memorial Day. And that's not quite it exactly either. Without going into deep detail about mercantilism and having our own colonial assemblies and our own government and who really was radical and who was maintaining the status quo and different ministers and King George III and all of that, I do want to talk just a little bit, if you'll be patient with me, about that Declaration of Independence. So Congress, Second Continental Congress, had been set up basically to help raise an army to fight this revolution. And they hadn't, no, that's not quite right. To try and protect the colonies, that's not quite right either. It's really a lot of history. It's complicated. Well, here's the gist. In late June and July of 1776, a committee was formed to write this Declaration of Independence so that the members, the delegates from the colonies in that Congress, could discuss and debate and vote on whether or not to actually declare independence from England. You see, the opinion of many, England was the aggressor. England, King George had sent troops and, what's the word I'm looking for? Mercenaries to enforce some taxes and some acts that many in the colonies believed were, well, today we'd probably call them unconstitutional. They were violating our rights, and they were, Parliament at least, was overstepping its jurisdictional bounds. They didn't have a right to impose some of the things over us that they were doing. So, you have your John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin and John Livingston and Roger Sherman. Mostly, as you probably know, Thomas Jefferson did a lot of the writing. And John Adams did a lot of the agitating. But I want you to think about, and I'm gonna try to not go over the 10 minutes here, but I want you to listen to these words. I don't have all of it memorized, and I don't have a copy of it in front of me, but I encourage you, everyone, to look it up. We've all got phones and internet, so Google a copy of the Declaration of Independence. Granted, some of it might be a little tough to read, and some of it might be tough to understand, but I just encourage you to try and read it. But I just want to give you a little portion of it here, what I remember. It may not be word for word, but most of it's pretty close. And like I said, you can look it up and compare what I say. I want this to be food for thought. I'm not telling you what to think or believe, but I want us, all Americans, I want people to think about what America really was founded on. Okay, so Jefferson begins with something to the effect of, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to sever the political bonds which have connected them to another, a decent respect for the opinions of mankind would require that you explain the reasons why you're going to do this, right? And something about taking your rightful place in the world and the rights that you are entitled to by nature and nature's God. And that's not exactly what word for word, but not too far off. So then he gets to the next part. And it's a pretty famous part. Political scientists and philosophers and literature, people that analyze writing and thinking, and of course, history, social studies teachers, talk about this as being the thesis, that is an essay or a study on natural rights. Okay? The idea is that everybody, because they're human, they've got certain rights and needs. That's part of what it means to be human. So here's what Jefferson says. This part you probably are familiar with. When in the course of human events, this is the part you're probably more familiar with. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. And then he goes on to say something along the effect of whenever any government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, replacing it with those principles and offices or structures or forms, I forget his exact wording, but to them may seem most likely to ensure their safety and happiness. Okay, so let's break that down a little bit. We hold these truths to be self-evident. First of all, a truth is not just a fact, not just a thought or a concept or an idea, but a principle. And not just a principle, but a universal principle. See, these guys during the Enlightenment are talking about social sciences a lot like other people think about physical sciences or life sciences. You know, your biology and your physics. They are observing and analyzing their observations and reporting and recording what they've observed, right? Social studies, it's kind of like scientific method. And if a principle is found and tested and observed often enough in science, like with gravity, for instance, we end up calling it a law. So they talked about natural law and natural rights. So a truth ought to be self-evident. This universal principle, this law of human nature, ought to be self-evident. Well, that's easy enough for most people to figure out. Self-evident, providing evidence of itself. In other words, it's obvious. It ought to be clear. It ought to be obvious. Anybody can see that this is true. That's what he's saying. And what does he say next? We hold these truths to be self-evident. To hold means that we believe, we agree, we accept these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Now, let's face it. Some people are skinny. Some people are fat. Some people are young. Some people are old. Some people are tall. Some people are short. Some people are bookish. Some people are athletic. Some people's parents are already millionaires. Other people are scraping by. What in the world does he mean by equal? Well, if you go on 87 or 100 years and look at the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, it says that everyone is entitled to due process of law and equal protection under the law. I can't speak for Jefferson. That's 240 some years ago. But I think what he was getting at is that everyone ought to be treated equally. We're equal not because of our talents or our value or our assets. We're equal in our rights, that we all have the same rights. That's what I think Jefferson was getting at. Now, if you ask me personally, as a Bible-believing Christian, I'm going to say everybody is created in God's image. And that means able to and deserving of love. Well, let's not go down that rabbit hole just now. Let's get back to the Declaration. I'm already over the 10 minutes. See if I can pull it in under 15 or 20. So, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. So instead of harping on endowed by their creator, how about let's harp on the inalienable part? What I tell kids in a public school, since I'm no longer teaching in a Lutheran school, is look, maybe you believe in a creator, maybe you don't. Maybe the creator that you believe in is different than the creator that I believe in. But let's say you're an agnostic or an atheist or a humanist or something else. Let's put this in secular terms. You are born with it. You've inherited it. It's part of being a human being. Inalienable, simply put, means that you can't separate having these rights and these needs and these basic attributes of humanity from yourself. You can't separate natural, basic, fundamental human rights from human beings. You can deprive them of them, you can abuse them, but it's part of what it means to be human. Having these rights means you're human. That's inalienable. It's inherited. It's congenital? No, that's not the right word. You're born with it. Okay? So even if you don't believe that they're God-given, they're part of what it means for us to be human. So if you agree with Jefferson, you hold this truth to be self-evident. That means that you agree that it's obvious that everybody's equal, in their rights at least. Now, again, I could come up with another rabbit hole, like people are saying that, well, my Second Amendment rights are God-given rights. It's not the government that gives me those rights, it's God. Well, okay. My God there's the guy who turned the other cheek, and he said that you should go the other mile and give him the coat off your back. I don't know that he is giving you a right to an assault rifle. But like I said, I don't want to argue, and I just tripped a trigger and went down a rabbit hole, and I shouldn't have done that. I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of angry comments in my comments, but let's go on. So, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. An awful lot of people seem to think that those are the only human rights, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. I teach my eighth graders, I tell them, what are the three core principles found in the Declaration of Independence? And by the way, they're not that partial list. Just because there's three items, that's not what I'm looking for. And inevitably, they always say, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Nope. That's a partial list. Jefferson said, among these rights that he just got done talking about as being endowed by your creator, among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So, again, I take you to the Constitution, and I believe it's the Ninth Amendment, says, you know, there's more rights than just those that we expressly delineated here in this document. And Jefferson is likewise saying that there's more rights than just these three. He said, among these. Excuse me. And in 1948, when the United Nations issued the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, I think it's Article 30, I don't remember the wording, but it says something along the lines of, you know, we might have missed some. Just because we have 30 different articles that we talk about as human rights, you know, doesn't mean that there aren't more. So that's a partial list, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And by the way, Jefferson lifted that. I'm trying to remember if it was from British philosopher John Locke or if it was from English parliamentarian James Burke, or maybe it was both of them. But somebody else had already written life, liberty, and property. But of course, you can't necessarily put that in this new declaration, because then all the riffraff and the poor people that don't already own their tobacco plantations, they're gonna say they're entitled to property too. Okay, so you got two of the three principles now. First principle is equality. And I also would love to tie this to Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, where he says that our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to something. Do you remember what it was dedicated to? Yeah, 67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. So the first principle found in the Declaration is equality. The second principle is that they're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So the second principle is that we have rights. You might say freedom or liberty, but those might just be synonymous. They might be almost interchangeable. And I know I'm going to have AP government teachers that might argue with me, but to have rights means that you can engage, you can participate, you can have a say, as opposed to somebody else telling you the way it's going to be. As far as I'm concerned, that's really freedom, having those human rights, being treated equally. That's a right. And in the preamble to that Universal Declaration on Human Rights, Eleanor Roosevelt, our first ambassador to the United Nations and former first lady during the Depression and World War II, she said something to the effect that, you know, humankind is a family and everyone should be treated with dignity and respect. So I think you have a right to equality. Let's go on to the third principle, though. The third principle, I think that some political scientists and writers might refer to it as justice. A lot of people, and I learned it this way, if you study John Locke and you study Jean-Jacques Rousseau and even Thomas Hobbes, you learn about a thing called the social contract. And social contract theory is the idea that if we're going to live in a civil society, if we are going to protect each other and kind of make some compromises so that we're not in a constant state of war and aggression and competition with each other, we agree to certain sets of rules, to laws, to setting up a government and setting up offices. And that is basically the social contract, that I agree to only drive 10 miles an hour in a school zone and 25 miles an hour in residential zones because you don't want your toddler on their big wheel or their tricycle to get run over. And it's easier for me to stop, and it's easier for me to see them if I am not going over 60 or 70 or 100, right? So we agree. We both get something out of it. Okay? I don't get locked up. I don't get fined. I don't have my car taken away from me. Your child gets to live. We both get something out of it. It's a contract. Well, listen to the way that Jefferson puts it, this contract thing. So remember, he had said that everybody is endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights. So then what he says is that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Since I'm already way over 20 minutes, instead of going into deep, deep detail and explanation, let's just say this. The reason we have governments is to protect our rights and ensure that everybody is treated equally. That's why. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. And how is it that they have power? Well, they kind of put that into the U.S. Constitution. The first words in the preamble are, "We the people." What Jefferson said is they derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. In other words, the way Lincoln put it in his Gettysburg Address, he might as well have said that we are the government. He said it should be of the people, by the people, and for the people. It is of the people because we have a right to have a say and to participate. That's by the people. It's of the people because we're all equal. There's not a ruling class. There's not rich landowners and poor peasants. If all of us are equal, all of us should have a chance to be in government. And again, it's by the people because that's what we're entitled to. We have a right to that. But it is for the people. Because why does it exist? To secure these rights. Right? We agree upon principles like are found in the preamble of the Constitution, that unity and that common defense and domestic tranquility and general welfare. We want justice. Well, how do you get justice? Well, you got to make some compromises and you got to agree to certain rules and laws and principles and then abide by them. That's a two-sided relationship. That's a contract. So, three principles found in the Declaration. Way over. I always wanted to be short. I wanted to be 10 minutes, and now I'm at 22. But three principles in the Declaration, and I barely touched the iceberg, the top of the iceberg of the Declaration. There's a whole lot more. But the three core principles there, which I think are the core principles to democracy, because you find them in the Constitution, you find them in Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, you find them in Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. But these three core things are, we're all equal, we've got basic human rights. Oh, by the way, not just Americans, all human beings. and you want justice? Well, you got to work together toward that. You got to join the social contract. So those are the three things, equality, rights, and social contract. And if you want to call it equality and freedom and justice, that's fine, whatever. Splitting hairs. But when you think about with liberty and justice for all, I hope that you will think of the all because we're equal, the liberty because we all have rights, and justice because we the people agree together. That's what made America unique and an experiment, is because it isn't top down, it's bottom up, and it isn't a king or an emperor or a dictator telling us what to do. It is we, the voters, we participating. Thank you for letting me get on my soapbox. Sorry for taking the better part of a half an hour. I hope that you'll think about this, and I hope that you'll look up a copy of the Declaration of Independence and read it. If not before this next 4th of July, maybe you ought to do it on the 4th of July. Maybe do it with your friends or family or out to your children. I know that makes it kind of sound quasi-religious, but hey, it's not just about boating and picnicking and camping and drinking a beer and grilling meat and, gosh, I'm hungry. Anyway, happy summer, everybody. Stay maladjusted.